there she stood in the street, smiling from her head to her feet. I said, hey, what is this? Now, baby, maybe, maybe she's in need of a kiss. I said, hey, what's your name, baby? Maybe we can see things the same. Now, don't you wait, oh, hesitate. Let's move.
A CBS News special report. I'm Nora O'Donnell in Washington, and we are coming on the air with breaking news from Kensington Palace in London. Catherine, the Princess of Wales, releasing a video statement saying she has been diagnosed with cancer.
I wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you personally for all the wonderful messages of support and for your understanding whilst I've been recovering from surgery. It has been an incredibly tough couple of months for our entire family, but I've had a fantastic medical team who have taken great care of me, for which I'm so grateful.
Well, this came as, in some ways, no surprise at all. In other ways, very shocking and sad news to find out that the reason behind all of the photo editing and the weird, what I still say was probably a body double that was out with Prince William that one time. You know, why has she been out of the public eye? Well, because she had a major health development, right?
In January, I underwent major abdominal surgery in London, and at the time, it was thought that my condition was non-cancerous. The surgery was successful. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present. My medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, and I'm now in the early stages of that treatment.
Yeah, so terrible news, obviously, for her and for the royals and for Britain and for the world who kind of loves her. You know, she said basically it was a huge shock to discover this. They've been trying to manage it privately, but with all, I mean, there's nothing that happens privately with the royals. And then, of course, they had to explain to their young children.
As you can imagine, this has taken time. It has taken me time to recover from major surgery in order to start my treatment. But most importantly, it has taken us time to explain everything to George, Charlotte, and Louis in a way that's appropriate for them and to reassure them that I'm going to be okay.
So she says, please give us some privacy, which, you know, kind of good luck with the tabloid media of the royals. She's looking forward to getting back to work, and she is thinking of all of those with cancer everywhere, and she appreciates all the support.
As I've said to them, I am well and getting stronger every day by focusing on the things that will help me heal in my mind, body, and spirits. Having William by my side is a great source of comfort and reassurance too, as is the love, support, and kindness that has been shown by so many of you. It means so much to us both.
Absolutely. Of course, our prayers for her and her family. Meanwhile, the horrible, huge news out of Moscow was this attack on a performance venue that, oh my God, it's just, it's the worst thing you can imagine. You know, you have, I don't even know, they keep updating the number of people that have been killed. It was over 130 the last time I checked, and they keep finding more people. The terrorists burned down the building, basically. They shot everybody randomly inside, 130-plus people killed, hundreds wounded. They've got them in custody, they say. You know, they've got the four direct perpetrators and several others in custody, all members of ISIS-K, which is the my wife asked me a very good question yesterday. She said, so why would, I thought, you know, Russia is working with Iran. Why would ISIS attack them when they're kind of, you know, allied together with a lot of these terrorists? And so, and it's a good question, which I think a lot of people, you know, don't necessarily understand the relationships. And even I had to kind of think through it in my head, like who's aligned with whom. And so the sort of short version of this is that Al-Qaeda, which would have been, of course, Osama bin Laden, with Wahhabi Sunniism out of Saudi Arabia. Al-Qaeda, the people who didn't think that Al-Qaeda was crazy enough, devoted enough, okay, if you wanted to, you know, take them at their understanding. The people who didn't think Al-Qaeda was devoted enough became ISIS, operating more so over in Syria, right? ISIS and the Islamic State in Syria and the Levant, okay? But an offshoot of ISIS came back over to Pakistan in that area, and somewhat Afghanistan, I guess. I don't claim to know exactly where everybody is, but, you know, That's what we get told. And that became ISIS-K. Okay, the K standing for that region of the world. They are aligned with, you know, again, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Saudi Arabia, Wahhabi Sunniism, Sunni, okay? Sunni Muslims. The other major branch of Islam is Shia, or you might have heard Shiite, okay? And that's Iran. That's Hamas. That's, you know, Hamas out of Gaza, Hezbollah out of, my brain, the Lebanon area, and then north, okay, of Israel. And then the Houthis, which are also aligned with them, Iran, out of, like, Yemen. Okay? So they are not, of course, they do not get along particularly with the Sunnis. So the Shiites is Iran. They're affiliated with Russia. The Sunnis, ISIS, ISIS-K, Al-Qaeda, although, again, Al-Qaeda and ISIS do not get along, they are the ones who made the attack. Now, they've been threatening to make attacks all over. They've been trying to grow ever since... for a long time. Of course, everybody wants to grow. They want to make their organization be the most feared, the most respected, the one that has the most kills under their belt to prove their devotion to, you know, their twisted version of Islam. And so they have been growing again. ISIS-K has been growing in Afghanistan and the Pakistani area. And now they claim this. They have tried to do other things. They have done other things. The weird part about this story, may have heard, but aside from the horrific attack and, of course, the, you know, danger that they represent to everybody everywhere, including us here in the United States, that was a big subject of the Sunday shows. The horrifying thing to learn about this attack is that 3 days before the attack, actually a couple weeks before the attack, the United States had warned them 2 weeks before the attack. The U.S. had warned them that they had actually warned U.S. citizens and embassy personnel, stay away from large gatherings, stay away from concerts because there were imminent plans for attacks by extremists. The March 7th alert, March 7th, okay, versus the 22nd when the attacks took place, March 7th. The embassy is monitoring reports that extremists have imminent plans to target large gatherings in Moscow to include concerts, and U.S. citizens should be advised to avoid large gatherings over the next 48 hours. Well, 48 hours came and went, but still, right? So they warned American citizens, and they warned Russia, which is their obligation, is to warn them, okay? Putin dismissed it as blackmail. 3 days prior to the attacks, this would have been Tuesday last week, said, all this resembles outright blackmail and the intention to intimidate and destabilize our society, calling the warnings provocative. That's according to TASS, which is the Russian news agency, reported that. So they were warned. Now, that doesn't mean that just because you have a warning, you can stop or prevent or anticipate. But, you know, they dismissed the warning as propaganda from the U.S., which, of course, now looks like a horrible decision on the part of the Russians. 437-1620, 437-1620. There's one other story I was going to tell you about, and I can't all of a sudden. Oh, we had the mother of the student that brought the gun to Gulf Breeze High got arrested over the weekend. Talked to Chief Hawthorne about that from the Gulf Breeze Police Department. And, this is a very unusual case. And I'm still trying to work out exactly what I think about it because, first of all, I think it's awful that he, a 16-year-old allegedly, okay, brought a gun to school and kept it in his, like, locker in the field house loaded, okay, a 40 caliber handgun. That's terrible. Then he was arrested because of other circumstances, you know, and then booked on a third-degree felony, possessing a firearm on school property. That makes sense. Lowest-level felony, that makes sense. And a first-degree misdemeanor charge of possession of a firearm by a minor, which also makes sense. He now faces 5 years in state prison for the felony, a year in county jail for the misdemeanor. He's being tried as an adult. I'm very conflicted about a lot of these decisions to try juveniles as adults. We had the 14-year-old that killed the 15-year-old recently is getting charged as an adult. And a 14-year-old being charged as an adult just strikes me as, you know, I'm not saying it can never be justified, but it feels like all too often we move them up to adult. And I know that if you only have the threat of trying people as juveniles, that a lot of these juveniles know that and they will misbehave worse because they feel like no real consequences come their way. Or at least if they do get caught, it's, you know, kind of wiped clean at 18 or whatever they believe, right? And you've got to create a deterrent threat. But man, you know, 14-year-old, or in this case, a 16-year-old. I mean, how many dumb things did you do when you were 16? And his whole life is ruined. Now, I'm not defending the decision to bring a gun to school. I'm not saying that he couldn't have or wouldn't have done something horrible. It just, we did prevent it, did catch it in time. Nothing did happen. And, I mean, I don't know. I remember when I was in, like, the ninth grade, there was a kid in one of my classes that had a gun in his pocket that he was showing off to people. It's not, I'm not saying it's that. I'm just saying, looking back, I'm kind of glad nobody caught him. Because it would have been the end of his life. And it's also weird to me, and maybe I'm seeing this wrong, but how can you charge somebody as an adult for the crime of possession of a gun as a minor? Like, if he's capable of being charged as an adult for crimes, then he's responsible enough to be treated as an adult. How can you also charge him for the crime of underage possession of a gun when he's being treated like an adult in other purposes? I don't know. It just seems weird to me. So again, I'm not saying that, you know, treating him seriously, treating him severely, discouraging other people isn't appropriate. It seems like a lot for a 16-year-old. Now, granted, we let 16-year-olds drive, so we do treat them like adults for a lot of purposes. And I don't know. It makes me feel uncomfortable for any kid, a teenager, with all of the crazy, stupid, poorly conceived things that teenagers do, to be treated so harshly at that age. But I want to know more. I want to know what the evidence is. I want to know if there is a pattern. I want to know, you know, how much chance is there to get their life turned around? Because once they go to prison for 5 years, if he does, it's hard to believe good things happen after that. Getting a job, even, for example, right? 521 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Some days I cover up because of my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now I'm hitting the road with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, Risankizumab Rizza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieved 90% clearer skin at 4 months. And Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis. And visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate. From managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and their HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
Hey, Kevin, how's the boat running?
Well, you know, last week I started working on the water pump, and now I can't remember how it goes back together.
Dude, stop. Call Key Marine. They'll get you and your Mercury outboard back in the water so we can go back to fishing again.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. They'll fix any problem, big or small, even if the problem is you don't remember how the parts go back together. Key Marine, your Mercury outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola.
Pensacola right now with Joe and Austin.
It's like headline news for radio. Every day, 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I want him out of commission.
But Sensei, I can beat this guy.
I don't want him beaten.
But I'll be disqualified.
Out of commission.
I'll buy you a Chevrolet if you'll just give me some of your love, girl. Please give me some of your love now. Please give me some of your love, girl. All right.
Clayton to town.
man, it was so close. So close for Florida. They had it. They had it. They had it.
Quentin to tie.
I'm sorry. Here, this is the actual one. Next one. They got it tied up, and then
Williams to inbound. Simpson with it for the lead.
Colorado's up. 75-footer, nothing. Florida gets eliminated. There was a lot of that going around. There was a lot of concern by a lot of people, including yours truly. I don't even know if I have the heart to go through these clips for the Auburn game. Oh, my God.
Donaldson looking for the tie. Not there. Rebound to Brewer.
Good D. Couldn't get it.
Donaldson comes up with it. Hamilton comes down with it.
How many times can you miss it?
Auburn's got a foul to stop the clock. All kinds of opportunities they had.
Auburn's up, down by three, and Trey Donaldson, one of their stars, just cannot get the ball to go. They wind up fouling Yale and...
Leaves it off the left side. Four-point deficit here for Auburn. Here come the Tigers. Johnson takes it in, draws the contact. Whoa, a chance for an and one. A possible three-point play.
Auburn is just trailing by two at this point. And then Johnson misses the free throw.
Every time, 9.4 in and out. Broom fighting for it. It's a loose ball. Alton falls down on it. We got a jump ball. It'll be Tigers basketball.
With the ball.
There is hope.
With the ball.
There is hope for the Auburn Tigers.
2 seconds to go. Down by two. Come on.
You got to go to him. And if you're Yale, you've got to find a way to rebound. What a play.
Oh, they lost Donaldson in the foul. On the inbound.
We got the ball. We got the free throw. We're down by one.
Pressure's a crazy thing. Donaldson, an 83% foul shooter.
He misses it both.
No.
Has it. Puts it up. Williams there. Rejected by Allerton. Johnson for the win. Out there. Yale riding the march. Magic high once again.
We will never speak of this again. Moving on. David, congratulations to you if you're an Alabama fan. You're in your Sweet 16 again, back-to-back. And Illinois makes the first Sweet 16 in, since 2005, I think. So that's my alma mater, so I'm excited about that. And they were dominant in their game, too. It looked terrible in the first game, looked great in the second game. David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, the deadline is getting closer for Donald Trump to pay the giant bond in his New York civil fraud judgment. Reports indicate his legal team is working to secure that ahead of the deadline today. The National Park Service being sued for not accepting cash payments at parks across the U.S. Three people filed a lawsuit earlier this month. They claim the Park Service is breaking federal law by not accepting cash for entry at various national monuments, parks, and historic sites. And this will be interesting. Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani is going to be addressing the media today for the first time since allegations of illegal gambling and theft involving his former interpreter surfaced late last week. Major League Baseball says it's now started a formal investigation into those accusations.
Yeah, so Shohei, he paid the guy's debts, right? Like, the guy had illegal gambling debts and he paid them. I think. It's just... crazy. This story is crazy. And there was it was a quote attributed to Pete Rose, basically like, so tell me again why I'm out of this game forever.
Right.
You know, like, which is fair at this point in history. David, thanks so much for the update. 529 on News Radio 92.3. Governor DeSantis signed the bill on revising the teen hours and teen work rules. It's not that big of a change to the current rules. It's got watered down a lot in the process. The short version of the changes now is that you still have a 30-hour work week limit for anybody 16 and 17-year-old when school is in session. But parents, guardians, or the school superintendent can waive that 30-hour limit, so they could work more. Also, 16 and 17-year-olds were not previously allowed to work more than 8 hours on Sundays and holidays when school was the next day. This would allow them to do that, but they work 8 hours or more and they get 30-minute meal breaks after the first 4 hours of work. I don't know. We have a shortage of work in this state when it comes to, you know, sort of low-end entry-level jobs. I don't know that this is the great solution to much of that, but I just remember when I was 16, 17 and all the work I was doing, and, you know, I'm not sure they need as much protection as some of these sort of paternalistic rules are designed to give. Should they be working the night before school for 12 hours? I don't know. Didn't you work a lot when you were a kid? I did. What's really the big deal?
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. It's deadline day for Donald Trump to secure a $500 million payment for a New York State civil fraud judgment against him or possibly have assets seized. Fox's Brooke Singman.
The big question now is, will the former president come up with the money? Now, Trump told me in an exclusive interview on Friday that he will take this fight all the way up to the United States Supreme Court if necessary. He also told me, quote, they can't take away your property before you've had a chance to appeal.
And Trump's expected in a New York City courtroom this morning for a hearing to set a date for his criminal hush money trial. The Supreme Court hears an abortion pill case today.
At issue, the FDA's approval of the abortion-inducing medication mifepristone, first approved more than 20 years ago. But a group of medical professionals opposed to abortion are challenging that FDA approval, arguing it did not meet safety protocols.
Fox's Jared Halpern. The drug's part of a two-drug regimen. The other works on its own, but with more side effects. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 63 degrees. It is partly cloudy this morning and windy in Pensacola. Well, the investigation continuing today after a deputy-involved shooting over the weekend that all started when a man allegedly skipped out on a taxi fare. This happened on Saturday. Investigators say 22-year-old Jeteris Damon Peaks refused to pay a Z-Trip taxi driver, then fired a shot at that driver when the man had tried to follow him around the block. That gunshot apparently shattered the rear window on that taxi cab. Deputies say they found Peaks shortly after that incident. They say Peaks had fled from deputies and pointed a gun at them, and that's when he was shot by deputies and taken to the hospital. Now, neither the deputies or the taxi driver involved in this whole thing were hurt. Peaks now facing multiple charges, including aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer, three counts on that, possession of a firearm by a felon and resisting arrest, and Peaks is being held at the Escambia County Jail with no bond. A 40-year civil servant, the former mayor of Foley, has passed away. 80-year-old John Conyard died over the weekend. He'd been elected to the city council in Foley in 1980, served until 2006. Was appointed mayor, served three terms as mayor, retired in 2020. Conyar is survived by his wife, two sons, a daughter, five grandchildren, a sister, and several nieces and nephews. We're learning about a crash that resulted in the death of a motorcyclist on Bear Lake Road in Santa Rosa County over the weekend. Now, this happened on State Road 4 and Bear Lake Road Saturday afternoon. FHP says an SUV was on State Road 4 and turned left at an intersection and did not yield to that motorcyclist. Florida Democrats vowing to give Republicans a good fight in November. That's what Democrat Senior Caucus of Florida President Lori Plotnick said Saturday in Fort Lauderdale. Florida Democrats gathered at a Broward County Convention Center. Of course, Florida voters went for Donald Trump in 2016 and 2020, but West and Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz says Florida could be in play this year. Marco Rubio says there's no easy answers when it comes to questions about Haiti. Rubio was on South Florida's NBC 6 yesterday to discuss what he's calling a very, very difficult situation. He says his office has been in touch with Americans that are trying to get out of Haiti. Some worried they may get kidnapped on their way to the airport. Rubio also says right now there's no appetite for U.S. military intervention. He also says his heart is broken for the people of Haiti because of what they are living through at the moment. 534 News Radio 92.3, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast for this morning.
A very windy day today with winds anywhere from 20 miles an hour sustained, gusting even higher. High today near 72 degrees, low tonight near 65 degrees. For Tuesday, showers and thunderstorms moving in through the morning and early afternoon. A few storms could be strong under a low-end risk of severe weather, high near 75, low near 57. On Wednesday, we will be calming down with a high near 76 and a low near 50 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 63 degrees right now in Pensacola. 63 in Gulf Breeze, 62 in Milton. Our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Hey, Pensacola. Get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are their dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
Pinnair Credit Union is here for every move-in day to the perfect home, every trip up the coast in the perfect car, for every business door unlocked, every dollar saved for something special, every dream achieved one goal at a time. We're here because Pinnair Credit Union has been a part of this community since 1936, and with affordable lending, flexible accounts, easy access, and smart guidance, we're a perfect fit for the way you bank. Join us at Pinnair.org. You'll fit right in. Insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you a fan of all things Florida? Then the Fresh from Florida Club should be on your menu. Search and save your favorite recipes, create custom menus, and get all your cooking questions answered by me, Florida's culinary ambassador, Chef Justin, for free. It's easy to sign up, and best of all, you'll be supporting Florida's farmers, ranchers, and fishermen. Join today at freshfromflorida.com. A message from the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Local experts share their expertise on the Pensacola Expert Panel. It's Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
So when I was on the health authority and Baptist came for the bonds, $678 million, I asked at both different meetings what they were going to do with that property. At that time, we never had to pay any money. You didn't have to pay any money. The state didn't have to pay any money. They were led to believe, or I was, that they were going to get a developer in there. Now, they've moved on, and I love Baptist, but they're asking every, you know, the state, the municipality, and the county to pony up for what they should have done when they did the bond deal.
Now, this is going back about a month. These are clips I had never managed to find time to get on the air, but with the conversation Thursday at the Board of County Commissioners meeting, I thought it was appropriate to go back and give you a little bit of background context from a month ago. This is from the February meeting. That's Mike Kohler talking about Baptist, basically coming for the big, you know, the bond issues for the new hospital, and him saying, like, there was no indication at that time that, you know, what has happened since would be the plan to happen. And, of course, we know since then they have moved. There's now a conversation about who's going to be responsible for paying to remediate that property, to demolish the building, $16 million price tag. State, county, city, Baptist, some is kicking in and, you know, trying to figure all of this out. But, you know, What his understanding of what was being promised at the time is not what came to pass.
Look, it's in your district, but it's not really fair to the taxpayers. They funded $678 million at the time, and they said they were going to get a developer. And you can go back and look at the minutes. So I don't know where I'm going to be on this. I think Baptist needs to come up with a little bit more. I know the county and District 3.
And in case you're wondering what the current funding scenario is, Alex Smith, who is the chief of staff for D.C. Reeves, kind of gave a good summary of this at the meeting on Thursday when they were talking about this and kind of, you know, explaining where the money was all going to come from now, again, a month later, which, you know, was kind of in the works at the time. But we know more details now after the legislative session has actually ended.
So just an update from the state legislature. So the legislature passed the budget last Friday or two Fridays ago with $7 million from the state for the property. So with that, we have $7 million from the state, the $2.9 from the sale of Paces.
All at three.
The tax credit goes through, a $3 million commitment from Baptist and a $1 million commitment from the city. So that's kind of where the funding stands. And I know, Commissioner May, we appreciate you being able to come on the tour of New Orleans, you know, to kind of get a vision for what we hope can happen at the Baptist campus, you know, going forward. So, you know, appreciate any support. You know, I know the mayor's asked $2 million from the county, so looking forward to the discussion and answering any questions y'all have.
If you put all those numbers together, seven from the state, three from Paces, three from Baptist, that's 13, one from the city, 14, two from the county, that's 16. An estimated project of $16 million, but that's kind of a swag. It's a, you know, we're not quite sure if that's it, but that's the number that's being thrown around. Nobody's done an official RFP in order to, you know, say, well, we will do it for $16 million, which is why the mayor had been kind of hesitant to really, really commit that they were going to certainly take a property and start working on the demolition. That had been, remember, the hang-up between him and Alex Andrade about, you know, getting the funding out of the legislature this year, which Doug Broxson pushed for on the Senate side. Alex said he couldn't push for it without a commitment because you can't go to the people and tell them, give me this money for the project that may not happen. Perhaps chair in the Senate, Doug Broxson, had a little bit more, you know, sway to be able to do something like that. In any case, they did get $7 million, okay, between them. So now we're back to this question of, you know, well, what to do? And we talked on Friday. Remember, John Hutchinson was in here for the wrap, and we talked about the, you know, the question of, like, is this a good project? Why should the city be in the development project? The other places where, you know, either cities or counties do development, it doesn't always work out so well, or at least it seems to take forever and ever and ever and ever because you can never get the board or the council to agree on anything. Witness the Community Maritime Park or, you know, the Tech Park or the OLF 8 or, you know, as in a so far. I mean, it does work sometimes. I mean, you know, if you look at the Santa Rosa County industrial parks, I mean, they're thriving. You know, they're doing extraordinarily well. Why is, you know, Escambia or the Pensacola struggle so much? Well, you know, there's a lot to be talked about there, but you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Anyway, I was having a conversation with somebody about this, and, you know, they made the point that, you know, talking about it as an investment, like would I put $10,000 into it if they bonded it out and you wanted to invest in it as a money-making opportunity? And I said, no, not really. But that's not the right question. And I was even thinking about this while John was on the air with me on Friday. I just didn't say it. I should have. It's not like do nothing is a great option. You know, let it sit there is also not a great option. And you might say, well, make Baptist pay for it. Well, I mean, make how? You know, is that to them $16 million? Is that their best use of their funds? Then what would they do with the property? Can you make them responsible for it since they do own it? Maybe. You know, did they not follow through on what they said they were going to do? Yeah, apparently. But what do you do with that now? And again, the answer is, well, okay, so who's on the hook for all of this, right? And, you know, is it just money spent? Well, from the state, yeah. From the city and the county, maybe we make taxes back. You know, does this represent economic investment and development? I mean, complicated questions. But to say, would you invest in it as a good plan at $16 million? No. Does that mean that do nothing is a better alternative? Well, here's what Lumen said a month ago.
But what I do know is that I have 54 acres of blight that's about to occur in my district, that's about to be homeless camps. It's about to be a lot of things if we don't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I mean, it is blight, and that's only going to get worse, right?
You find these different hospitals that have left the neighborhood, and then you find that those neighborhoods go down. We don't have much hope in those pockets of poverty. We just don't have much hope.
Yeah, I mean, an empty hospital at the center of a community, And that community in particular, which is already not great for a long time, it's devastating. There's no way around it. And so is do nothing really an answer? Well, he says, look, I want a medical facility and I want jobs because they need medical facilities because they're far away from everything else right now. And people who get hurt have a long way to go to get to the New Baptist or to Sacred or to West Florida. And so he wants to see jobs and, you know, medical. The city wants to see housing, right? Everybody wants to see something out of that property. Nobody wants to see it stay what it is, but you know, somebody's going to have to put up money to get what they want to have happen actually happen. So then this question at the meeting on Thursday came up of, well, okay, if we put in $2 million to bring the total to 16, what happens if the demolition costs less? Because, you know, in government, things cost less a lot. Right? But, I mean, it's a fair question. You know, what if it turns out not to be 16 to demolish and make the property useful? What if it comes back at 13 or 12?
And I guess, Alex, I know I've had a lot of conversation with D.C., on this project. If it comes underfunded, under budget, we would pro rata get our money back, or, I mean, how would that work? I mean, who would be the first to, since it's a city-led project, who would be the first to receive the funds back?
I mean, I think that's a great discussion to have with the mayor, and I think he'd be open to having that discussion further with you. I know he hasn't had that discussion yet, been focused on getting the money, but I mean, I think that's definitely a reasonable request of the mayor.
You know, when you ask a question of the boss's assistant, and the boss's assistant says, you probably should talk to the boss about that, which is right. I mean, he's there representing D.C., but this is obviously a question that he cannot answer with the authority that he has. That's a question for D.C. and the council, right? Mike Kohler.
I do think that this could be a good program, but I do believe that the county should be the first to get the money back if it is under $16 million. I think that's right. We don't know the actual cost for the demolition, right?
That's correct. It has not been formally submitted for bid yet.
And Mike, I will tell you, I'm not, I mean, a lot of people are committed that it has all be demoed. That's not my position. I mean, I think there could be some reuse of some of the facilities that are there, in my opinion.
So that's kind of an interesting wiggle on this topic because Lumen May is not convinced it even needs to all be demolished. Some may be yes, some may be no. He wants to see medical in that area. He wants to see jobs in that area. You can't just use that facility for anything and everything. There's limits on what it can be used for, I guess, because of the prior bonding. That's what Mark Faulkner, the president of Baptist, had said about that in the meeting. It's also interesting, this question of who gets their money back first. I think it's unlikely to come back below 16. If anything, it's likely to be more than that rather than less than that. But it's a weird position, I think, for the county to say our money's last in, first out. It seems more reasonable to me that you get a prorated share back. I mean, if it comes back at, you know, let's say $12 million and there's $4 million left on the table, well, you know, the state put in almost half. The county put in 2 out of 16, you know, 1/8. The city put in 1/16. Everybody gets a prorated share back, which is kind of what Lumen said in the beginning. I don't think this notion that Mike Kohler of, you know, we put our money in last, least commitment, we need to get it back first. I mean, everybody's going to believe that, but that's just not really the way that things work typically. So Lumen says, look, Commissioner May says, I want medical care in my community. I want jobs in my community. I don't just need housing, which, of course, they also need.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Mike, there's not an urgent care in my neighborhood. You know, there's not health care anywhere around there. So I think there's going to be a possibility or a path to kind of figure out some type of urgent care, community care, medical care in that district. I mean, it's a high priority.
Right.
And so that doesn't change the scope of the use.
If you could do that, and I agree that I think that would definitely be within what you can do.
If you can do that. And what he means there is, you know, what's allowed and then also what's there a will to make happen? Because I think Lumen's going to continue to push for this. You know, 50 or 60 years we've had health care there. We ought to have health care there. But there's not there right now. And that seems to be part of the bargain in the beginning, is that was what was going to stay. So they go on to talk about this quite a bunch. And then there's one, the most awkward question that got asked in the meeting was Mike Kohler said, well, we've been talking about what if the money is more than enough. What if the money's not enough?
What's the plan if it goes over $16 million? Who's responsible?
Long pause.
Responsible for the other $16 million.
Say it's $19 million. Who makes up the $3
million? That's a conversation I think the mayor would have with our, you know,
right.
Our partners that have come
exactly.
Forward with this already. You know, I mean, we're committed to trying to make this work, and you know, we hope it's $16 million, but if it's over, you know, the mayor's committed to trying to find, you know, more money and, you know, making sure we can make this happen.
Okay.
Right. I mean, if the project comes in, you know, at 19 or 20, that probably still going to try to find a way to do it. So that's what they settle on is $2 million from the county, kind of sort of semi-reluctantly, maybe if probably, I would say. And so that brings the total of funding available for the project to $16 million. What now? Well, we'll see. You know, we're waiting to watch. 550 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Spring is a great time of the year for gardening, whether it's fertilizing the lawn, pruning, planting shrubs and summer blooming plants, and of course, tending to that vegetable garden. This is Mike Quiggins. If you've got spring gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line. Every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesday, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9. It's sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, Blue Sky Landscaping, and Barnes Feed Store.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
Let's be honest, nobody likes taxes, but they are necessary to maintain roads, support schools, and fund public services. Wouldn't it be great if someone else paid our taxes? In Escambia County, they do. Our beautiful community draws millions of visitors who spend over $1 billion each year. The taxes they pay help lower the tax burden for locals. Tourism works for all residents and businesses in Escambia County. This message brought to you by Visit Pensacola.
Get news at the top and bottom of every hour with WEAR-TV, our local news team, and Fox News on News Radio Pensacola.
I promise I'll never even think about going up in a tall building again.
I keep forgetting to mention this. Somebody sent me a really good text to remind me to tell you that it's windy out today. It is super, super windy. If I'm looking at my wind map, you got sustained winds over much of the area in the about the 20 to 25 vicinity, depending on over land in Escambia County and Santa Rosa. It's more like 15. But, you know, over the bridges like Bob Sykes, 3 Mile, Perdido Key Bridge, it's more in the like 25 vicinity. With gusts as much as mid-30s in some 30, 32, something like that. So please be careful, especially if you're driving a big truck. You know, you're dealing with wind this morning. It's very serious. Several texts in here on this Baptist property project. Somebody says, yeah, $16 million, good luck. I wager it's going to be more like 20 to 25 million. Well, I have no idea, okay? But I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess that the people who are closest to this that are looking at the price tag at 16, at least they believe they have a pretty good guess at 16. Now, could they be completely off? Yeah. And it's the unknowns they discover after that are going to be the big question, right? But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and we'll hope to hear it in that vicinity. But every day you wait, it goes up. I mean, that's one of the big problems. See, somebody else says, thanks for discussing this topic. So many things are wrong with the entire situation. It's a no-brainer. It was Baptist property, and it's theirs to deal with. It's no different than a Walmart walking away from a property. They had $500 million, it's actually $600 million, to build almost more than that, $650 or $660, something like that, to build a new one and nothing to pay to take care of this. It's wrong for us to get involved. I think a lot of people feel that way. I mean, a lot of people feel like, you know, this is Baptist's baby. But again, you know, how are you going to make them do it? What are you going to do? Code enforcement, you know, Is it in their mission to solve that property? That's the question. And then even if you decide that it is, how do you make them do that? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm sure I'm not the first person to ask that question of the situation, right? 437-1620, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, New York City's Mayor Eric Adams called off a trip to the U.S.-Mexico border over safety concerns over the weekend. He was set to travel to Texas on Saturday to visit the border and meet with humanitarian leaders. But apparently there were some type of safety concerns at one of the cities. It was the reason for that. Officials say two crew members on a Holland America cruise ship died on Friday. A spokesperson for the cruise line says it was an incident in an engineering space on the ship. And the Powerball jackpot rolling over again. Nobody won the grand prize Saturday night. So tonight's drawing now up to an estimated $800 million.
How's that retirement plan going?
Well, obviously nobody won, so there is a chance.
Do you actually buy a ticket every time?
No, absolutely not.
Thank God.
Just my idea of a running joke.
It is a running joke. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 555 on News Radio 92.3. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, an actual investment strategy, as opposed to the buy the lottery ticket strategy, which is not a good strategy, you're thinking about buying or selling, trying to make some money, acquire a rental, upgrade your living condition, stop burning money on rent, you know, whatever, okay? Move out of the parents' house, you're getting married, or sadly getting divorced. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons, okay, that people would need to buy or sell a house and get a good realtor. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realtor, just really good at this. 175 homes last year, unbelievable amount of experience on the whole team, and Christina's been doing this. It's really amazing for, like, what, 6 or 7 years now to have that kind of level of success is wild. And it's because she loves it. She loves learning, loves meeting people, and is just incredibly talented at what she does. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, 723-9158. 556 here on News Radio 92.3. This is just, you know, file this in the, like, the odd story category. I love the odd stories. I don't know why. I just have an extra affection for them. But this is odd story number one. I actually have several to tell you. Why do teenagers stink? Have you ever been around a teenager? Do they smell good? They do not. They do not smell good. And apparently there's been a study on this in the journal Communications Chemistry. They compared infants to teenagers. You know how babies smell so good. Baby's head, smells so good. And teenager head, not so good. We love them, but, you know. Anyway, they identified the smells in teenagers. There's two steroids that cause teenagers to smell of sweat, urine, musk, and sandalwood. Along with carboxylic acids and odors described as cheesy and goat-like. Infants, meanwhile, have high levels of a ketone that smells like soap, flowers, and violets. The two steroids that cause the unpleasant smells in teenagers are only present in teens because the precursors to the steroids are secreted by sweat glands. Those sweat glands not active before puberty. So puberty makes you stink. They become steroids when they're broken down by the skin microbes. So they come out okay, but the microbes in your skin make them bad. Carboxylic acid, the result of secretion of sebum or sebum, an oily substance that protects the skin. The glands involved are dormant in children but get very active again around puberty. And, you know, there's all these theories about, see, this is designed to bond infants and their good smells with parents and to separate teenagers when they're about to go out into the wild and hunt or gather or whatever for themselves. I don't necessarily buy all that, but, you know, it's an interesting theory. 437-1620, 437-1620. You know the Wendy's dynamic pricing, we're going to charge you more to eat when everybody wants to eat thing that blew up in their face badly? Apparently, this is in the offing for many restaurants. There are many, many, many restaurants, some who are already doing this, that are offering what they call dynamic pricing, you know, where surge pricing and then low demand pricing, you know, the same meal would be $12 in the, like, at 11 and then $20 at 1 o'clock or something like that. There's a restaurant in California that did it, and they actually boosted sales by 12%. They raised prices 8 during busy periods, dropped them as much as 20 during slow times. I mean, you know, the happy hour is a version of this, right? Discounts are a version of this. To me, again, the takeaway is just set your price and then offer a discount off-peak. Otherwise, people are going to be angry at you. That's the marketing approach.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.